Welcome to Entering Storybrooke, a Once Upon a Time podcast,
where we rewatch and analyze the ABC show. Before we begin, our podcast artwork was designed by Nickel Anarchy.
And our theme song was created by Taylor Paisley French.
Be aware, this podcast contains spoilers for the Once Upon a Time series.
Hello and welcome to Entering Storybrooke, a Once Upon a Time rewatch podcast hosted by a band of brave magical adventurers cursed to believe they're podcasters. My name is Jerry, and I'm one such podcaster. Joining me is Fran.
Hello. Hello.
And Robert.
Hello, I exist.
So, Robert, what episode are we looking at today?
Oh, Jerry, well, that's a wonderful question. Today we're looking at Season 1, Episode 4, The Price of Gold, which premiered on ABC November 13th, 2011. It was written by Edward Kitsis, Adam Horowitz, and David H. Goodman. It was directed by David Solomon. Notably on this day, November 13, 2011, number one song in the U.S. was We Found Love by Rihanna, top of the box office was the film Immortals with Luke Evans, and the day before, on the 12th, Usain Bolt and Sally Pearson were named World Athlete of the Year.
I feel not bad, to like though, technically. Oh, sorry, sorry.
Oh, sorry. No, Fran, you go first.
I was going to say, I accidentally took Robert's thing of doing the notable things of the month just because I was just doing the document and just automatically filled it in, and then they sent me a message.
Fill it in? It's a new bit. We did this just last episode. I even improved on it because I'm like, oh, I should maybe note out who directed and wrote the episode.
I loved that. I loved that. That's I felt nice. Very professional.
Yeah.
I enjoyed that. Also, did not know that Edward's name was Kitsis.
That's what Google says. That's what Google says. Like, I looked it up because I'm like, how the fuck do you pronounce this name? And that's what it says. It might be wrong. I'm pretty sure we're going to get some kind of email or comment being like, you're wrong. That's not how you pronounce it. But I won't read the email, so.
If you're going to email us to tell us we're wrong, also please provide a source to the correct information.
Yeah.
I don't want to hear your critiques if you're not going to offer us any resources to improve.
I'm also trying to remember what our podcast, our email for the podcast is.
Yeah, I'm looking that up right now because I'm trying to beat you to it.
Thank you, I appreciate that because entering Storybrooke podcasts at outlook.com.
Damn it! All right, so let's see which of the three of us will be doing the 60-second recap today. In 3, 2, 1, the wheel spin. Who shall it land on? We don't know. It'll land on... It's slowing down. It landed on Fran. Fran, I hope you're ready today.
Hey, Fran, your turn.
I was going to say, this is my first turn. I am not prepared, but... Oh, wait. Does someone else want to do the timer?
I'll do it.
Okay.
I'll do it.
Oh, God. Okay.
All right, Fran, are you ready? You got extra seconds to think about it.
I'm ready. Let's go.
3, 2, 1, go.
It's a new day in Storybrooke, and Emma and Henry are out on the prowl to find new things to do with fairy tales. And in this case, it is with Cinderella, a very pregnant woman who has unknowingly allowed herself to be tricked by Rumpelstiltskin to give her baby away to have a fairy godmother moment of being able to go to the ball. And because she didn't read the fine print, like most people don't, she fucked up. And in the real world, in Storybrooke itself, the Queen Regina is having something a little bit mysterious going on in her life in the case of sex. For everyone who doesn't know, that is sex. And as we find out later, it is with the sheriff. But Henry has been sneaking around to see Emma so they can find out more and help Cinderella so they can help save the fairy tale characters and bring back their happy endings. Thankfully, in the case of Cinderella, that does happen because she's able to reunite with her prince and keep the baby because Emma has allowed herself to take a deal with gold.
Well done. 4 seconds to spare.
Yeah. I hope I covered everything. For a second, I was like, I do not remember what happens in this episode.
I mean, you had the broad sweeps.
The broad sweeps.
Broad sweeps.
There are finer details. I'm surprised. We'll get to a different moment. I thought you would notice it was me, but how about we start talking about this episode?
Totes. What do we think?
I love it.
Yeah, it's fun.
Yeah. I remember it stuck out to me because I thought this was the Mr. Gold episode, like his origin story. Because I remember it specifically being Mr. Gold-centered. That season 1, episode 4 was Mr. Gold-centered. And it is. It's just not his origin.
He's just a primary antagonist of the week.
Yes.
Yeah. And then consistently. Continuously. Mm-hmm. Definitely not the only time.
No, not at all.
But this episode is a good setup for the fact that he is going to be a continuous villain throughout mm-hmm. this series. Just because, like, just blind, I'd actually kind of forgotten about this episode. I knew there was the Cinderella thing, but I actually completely forgotten that they changed her story by having Mr. Gold, or Rumpelstiltskin, kill her fairy godmother.
Yeah, that...
And basically become the fairy godmother himself. But for the for a baby instead of just, you know, for fun. Mm-hmm. And I've completely forgot that happened. Like, it did not click with me. I remember that there was a baby situation, but I couldn't remember where that came about. I didn't remember anything about the fairy godmother. So it was an interesting episode. I did make a note. I'm just going to say it now. The fact that the fairy godmother is the first... Well, not the first, we've got Sydney. One of the mm-hmm. only other people of colour in the show, and then is immediately murdered
yeah.
by Rumpel. I was like, that's a hate crime. I'm calling that, yeah. like, that's a hate crime.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I remembered the fact that Rumpelstiltskin kills the fairy godmother, because when I watched this episode the first time, exactly 10 years ago, not to date when we are recording this, but it was exactly 10 years ago, gang. I was just like, holy shit, just the irreverence of murdering Cinderella's fairy godmother just in the middle of her bibbidi-bobbidi-boo moment. Just, it is great. It does set up what this show is doing with fairy tales, in which is none of your expectations. It's not going to undermine. So, in Star Wars Last Jedi, all of your expectations are flipped around. What you think you know about what you're getting is never going to be what it is. And that's what you get in Once Upon a Time. And I think just, we see that a little bit, and we get that, oh, they're making, like, Snow White a badass. And, like, there's more complicated characters. But just murdering the fairy godmother is a very different way of introducing that idea. Yeah. I had forgotten, because 10 years ago was not something I clocked, because of, you know, I am a white woman, and these were not racial things I was aware of at the time and have been working to further educate myself and deconstruct my own biases. Did not notice the fact that this is the first black woman who has any lines in the show, is immediately killed, and we don't have another black woman who actually has, like, a any lines, I think, until
season two.
So
she gets one line in season 2, because this is Marion's character, and then a few more lines in season 3, and then is, spoilers, killed and replaced by a white woman immediately.
Yeah,
I forgot. Okay. In her own body.
I was thinking, is the anti-magic woman, she's played by a black actress, isn't she?
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah, no, she is in season... Oh, yeah, I've completely forgot. Yeah.
Right, no, because she, I think, is also killed.
Yeah.
Spoilers, y'all, but...
Yeah. Oh, Tamara, that was it. Also, she's overshadowed by the white man. She's overshadowed by both white men that she's connected to as well.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like,
Sydney might just be the only character of color that I can remember.
Who then disappears.
Right, that happens to him at some point.
Yeah. Here's something I meant to bring up when we were talking about that episode where Sydney's introduced as the magic mirror, and I just kind of spaced. In the movie, the animated movie of Snow White, the Disney flick, in the credits of the movie, the magic mirror is called the Slave of the Mirror.
Oh, that's...
So that's just uncomfortable that we have the magic mirror.
There were also other... Speaking of moments from past episodes that you recently clocked in on, there are other things that you especially talked to us about. Like, mm-hmm. these are things that I didn't notice. Like, why Dr. Frankenstein is named, like, Dr. Whale.
Oh, yeah. Can we do the name thing real quick? I mean, we're already off in...
We're already talking about, yeah.
But yeah, shout out to my good friend Tim, who listens to the pod and isn't texting me about the show. He pointed out to me that we talked about how, like, Dr. Whale's name, that doesn't make sense. Everyone's name is at least a pun to their fairy tale origin. What's up with Dr. Whale? Whale was the last name of the first director of that old Frankenstein movie. And then Tim also pointed out that Snow White's Mary Margaret name is... Yeah, she's Mary, Mother of the Savior.
That's kind of sad. That's a bit disappointing.
I'm like,
Christianity, please.
I was practicing Catholicism when I was watching this, literally going through my confirmation, and I'm like, I should have clocked that 10 years ago. Yeah, definitely a sign that I was not very invested in what I was doing religious-wise.
Religion do be like that.
So thank you, Tim.
Yeah, thank you, Tim. We appreciate you. I would say, just to kind of go into another thing, just to do with the other things that I didn't fully clock until now, the heteronormativity of the sheriff and Emma is so strong at the very start of this episode, basically, that it makes me uncomfortable. And then the further part of, like, adding to the Regina and Graham situation of the sheriff, adding more heteronormativity to these women. What I did find funny, which was like a sort of a thing that stood out to me, was the sheriff and Emma have their flirty moment, and then immediately after, Regina and Emma have their sort of like high tension sort of moment of like the enjoy your cocoa scenario, which had more sexual tension than Emma and the sheriff did. Like, it was like a plank of wood talking to Emma. Like, and it just makes me fun. I just forgot like how blatant the heteronormativity in this series was.
Oh yeah. It's very much it's just very much that, and I'm like, oh yeah. We don't need any of this. Actually, this is not contributing to these plots, really.
Nope. Not even in the slightest.
The only hetero I want to see is in the fairy tale romances, and I'd actually prefer if you made them gay. Thank you.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Just a little bit. Just a little bit gay as a treat.
As a treat, and Disney says no, and continues to say no for 10 years.
Yeah, it's.
By the way, everyone, go watch The Eternals. Go watch Eternals. It's a good movie, and they have good representation.
Spoilers, quote unquote, for Eternals, the first openly gay character in the MCU world.
And he's a main character.
And he's a main character! And he's great. Ugh.
It's not far off for us to talk about MCU. I mean, if they made Once Upon a Time Now, they'd be like, oh, we own Marvel. We'll have Tony Stark somehow interact with Snow White in the past.
I mean, this was kind of a proto-MCU in that it's the fairy tale cinematic universe, essentially. All the fairy tales now exist into one cohesive story, and they hang out.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they do technically have multiple universes, so, like, there technically is the fairy tale multiverse.
Yeah. So speaking of fairy tale characters hanging out together, I really, really, really loved seeing Snow White and Prince Charming do just like fairy tale royal shit by just being at Cinderella and also her Prince Charming. I think his name is Thomas. Their wedding. Yeah. I just thought that was really cute. It's like, see, this is what your life should have been like. You do fairy tale royal shit. You go to weddings and fight dragons.
I only care about one of the only proper ship that I care about that's heteronormative is Snowing. I do not care about Cinderella's husband. I just kept writing him as Cinderella's husband whenever I had to address him in the notes. It's something like Thomas, I think. I don't remember, but also I don't care about him.
Yeah, I wrote when he showed up, generic white dude. Generic, charming white dude. Like, very forgettable face.
And then in the real world, he's just generic white dude, but with abusive dad.
Yeah, I like that element of how we see the curse twisting people's personality, where at the wedding, when the king, his dad, is dancing with Cinderella, he's like, we're so happy to have you in the family, Ella. I see the family's gonna grow soon. It's so wonderful. We love you so much. And then in Storybrooke, you have this father who's like, I'm not gonna let my son's life be ruined by that girl.
Very realistic.
Got pregnant out of wedlock, and they're like 19 years old.
I hate that. I did write somewhere in the notes that it's surprisingly progressive of a 2010s ABC show to tackle teen or like young pregnancy or like wedlock pregnancy in a sort of respectful way, quote unquote.
Yeah.
Like the main dilemma of the Storybrooke part of this episode is that Ella breaks into Mr. Gold's shop, quote unquote, steals some stuff. Which does she? Because
she tries to. The contract.
She tries to.
Right. I thought she did because she took the key. So I thought she stole.
Yeah,
we never actually see the contract.
Mr. Gold, it doesn't like when Mr. Gold gets in contact with Emma and he's like, "Listen, I want you to find this girl. She stole something from me." He's not talking about like an item. He's talking about the baby inside of her that he's like gonna give to someone else.
Because we find out that the dad hooked them up to be like, oh well, her name is Ashley in this one, Ashley is not capable of taking care of this child. She can't handle it. It won't work. So we have set it up. Basically, they are forcing her to give up her baby.
Yeah.
And like, Ashley is about one traumatic day away from becoming the woman in black, and we don't want that. So I'm glad Emma showed up.
I was definitely getting, now that I'm thinking about it now, I'm getting Juno vibes, which is a movie I haven't seen in a while.
I haven't seen it either, so I can't comment.
I haven't seen Juno, so you're just going to have to elaborate on these feelings.
It's the movie where Elliot Page and Michael Cera have
I know there's a pregnancy.
Yeah. It's generally a lot of the same plot where Elliot's character is like, I'm not ready, and like gets into contact with rich people who will buy the baby or something like that. But then towards the end, he's like, actually, I'm fine. Yeah, whatever. Fuck it. I'll do it. And then raises a baby with Michael Cera.
I guess there are worse white dudes to raise a baby with. Ashley's been pregnant for 28 years.
Yeah, that's a weird thing to think about.
Yeah.
There are many moments where I am thankful I'm not a girl, and one of them would be the hypothetical of being pregnant for 28 years.
Yeah, it's it's not like she's just had a 28 year long pregnancy. She's been 9 months pregnant for 28 years. And it's like, of course Henry's like, something's fucking wrong here. That blonde lady's, I mean, he probably never actually met her. She's a maid. He's the son of a mayor. But also,
The
city was not actually frozen in time. Henry has a pretty recent comic book that he's reading at the beginning of this episode.
That was something I liked, is that, I think that's something I like about Regina, is that even though she's again, we go to the whole, Regina's presented as a hard ass and quote unquote doesn't love Henry, which is the idea the show wants to like promote. But like, he lives comfortably. His room is nice. He gets comic books. He gets whatever. It's just that Henry knows that she's the evil queen, and in his mind, he has to put it in, she's evil, so she actually doesn't love me, you know, something like that.
Yeah.
I've got to say, though, Henry is the epitome of the privileged white male who needs to find a reason to be unhappy with his life. Obviously, having the evil queen as a mother, not a good situation. But she does love him. She does look after him. Yes, she's strict, but she doesn't she doesn't abuse him. She doesn't do any of the things that, like, even Emma points out in, like, the first episode, like, you live in a mansion. Like, you are not struggling for anything. And he's like, oh, but she doesn't love me. I'm like, she buys you anything you want whenever you want it. Like, he's very clearly a good mother.
Yeah.
Just has some issues.
Yes, there are issues. I would not go so far as to say that I think Regina is a good mother yet. I do think in this moment that she is not the best mom she could be, largely because, and so let's talk about the thing she does to Em at the beginning of the episode when she shows up and Emma was like walking Henry to the bus, and Regina shows up and Emma's like, oh, are you going to be mad at me about that? And she's like, oh no, I've decided you're not a problem because I've looked into you and you've had 7 addresses in the past 2 years. So you're just going to leave eventually. And I just hope you leave sooner rather than later so it doesn't hurt Henry. Which is shitty because Regina's just saying that to hurt Emma. She doesn't actually care that Henry will be hurt when Emma leaves because she's trying to get her out of here sooner. Whereas if Regina really cared, and not to say she doesn't care about Henry, but she is not in a place where she can have the emotional maturity to recognize when Emma leaves, it will hurt Henry. Emma leaves a lot. What she should have this conversation is, if you want to spend time with my son, you're going to need to commit to being part of his life. You can't just up and disappear on him. That would devastate him. Are you actually going to stay or not? If you're going to leave, then please leave sooner rather than actually hurt him. But if you want to be part of this life, you need to commit, because I'm not going to see my child hurt by you. And that would make more sense rather than, oh, you should just leave sooner rather than later, because you're going to leave anyway, so whatever.
Yeah.
It's like, Regina needs to reach that point where she is able to disconnect what she wants as a person with what is best for the happiness of her child, and she's just not there yet. And that part of the show eventually is her being able to get there, but right now it is very much just bad mom, evil queen, oh, adoption.
Yeah. Which,
I just need to point out that if Emma had a theme song, especially for the first episode, or for the first season, it would be Should I Stay or Should I Go by The Clash.
Yes.
Accurate. Yeah. I read that scene a little differently, but now that you've said it, Darren, I do kind of see where you're coming from, in the sense that like Regina is thinking of it more from her perspective more than Henry's actual feelings. I think she is still kind of worried about how Henry will be affected if she does up and leave suddenly, because that's what she does.
Yeah.
But it is definitely more of the focus on like it'll be better for Regina for her to leave. Maybe I also think it'll be because of the fact that maybe she doesn't think Henry will be as hurt because he'll still have Regina.
So yeah.
He'll still have her. Not so fully recognized.
He'll be fine either.
Yeah. So I don't think she's fully recognized at this point that Henry truly hates her. Like, I don't think she's fully at that stage. Because when that stage happens, and it's absolutely heartbreaking. But I don't think she's fully at that point. Which is why I think she doesn't think there's going to be much of like an emotional issue behind it, because
that
she's
makes
still
sense.
There.
Yeah, I think we do see that.
Oh, sorry, Karen.
I was going to say, like, I think this is something definitely more for in the next episode, which I did watch last night a little bit more. I think that it highlights that. I think Regina doesn't fully realize the harm it would do Henry. She views it as something that she could easily fix. She's the queen. She controls everything. And imagine it's frustrating for her. She's like, I've controlled everything for so long and I can't control this. And it's just very frustrating. And she doesn't know how to handle it. And it just, she keeps going in so hot and so hard. And every time she tries to like force her will onto things, it doesn't work anymore. Like, people aren't cowering down to her. They're not doing what she wants. And it's largely because Emma's here and Emma's bringing a new perspective that wasn't there before. Emma's telling this pregnant maid who's just like, no one thinks I can do this and it's terrible, and she's sad, but she's already resigned herself to like giving up her baby, even though she wants to keep her child, she wants to be a mother. And Emma tells her, screw what they think. I think one of y'all wrote down,
I wrote it down because that was a huge thing, because that's like the highlight for me for this episode is us learning more about Emma and seeing
this
strong side about her, because we also get this hint of her past as well, of like, The line is, I don't think it's exact, I think I didn't fully get it right, but it's, people will tell you who you are your whole life. Punch back and tell them, no, this is who I am. And I love that line so much, because like, even though it's early on in us kind of finding out a little bit more about what happened to her and all these sort of things, to kind of bring it back a little bit to the Emma and Regina situation, in this scene, we're seeing, and obviously from the episodes we've had focused on Regina, we're seeing how complex both of their histories are. Like, this whole thing of, like, they are each other's foils, they're each other's opposites, but there's also so many similarities between them. I think this was a sort of situation of that, of us seeing that Emma herself has a darkened past. Something has gone wrong in her past, which has led her to have this tough, no-nonsense exterior that we're seeing right now. Because, like, we see her reaction initially to Ashley being like, come on now, being a bit dramatic. Then seeing she's pregnant and immediately turning away. Like, she could not look at Ashley when she realised that she was pregnant until she heard her getting more emotional. She's kind of acting like, this is a bit annoying, I don't really want to be in this situation. And then hearing what she has to say of, like, people don't believe I can do this, but I'm trying, I want to, but maybe they're right. And then she gets involved. She's seeing like this reflection. The irony of the fact that Ashley is a young blonde woman.
Yes, well. Exactly.
Like, she's literally basically Emma. Which I thought was just a really, really interesting thing for this episode to do.
It's definitely there to just lead a parallel. Like, we learn more in detail. This is something I remember. We learn more in detail. There's a whole episode dedicated to it when we meet Henry's father in the future. How Emma was going through giving birth while she was in prison, wasn't she?
Yes, and Gold knows this and uses this to manipulate Emma into helping him. But continue, Robert, we will circle back.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a lot. I don't know. What I do want to point out, because I just remembered reading my highlights. I wrote these like 2 hours ago and I just remembered them now. There are several lines throughout the show that through this episode that I like that all correlate to Mr. Gold in some way.
Okay.
The first being where Emma is telling Ashley, there are no fairy godmothers in this world, and then it cuts to Mr. Gold, and I'm like, that's beautiful cinematography. And then when Ashley is breaking into Mr. Gold's shop and he's like, Ashley, what are you doing? Changing my life! And pepper sprays him. And then he, like, I laughed so hard when he fell. He, like, fucking goes backward and just falls into, like,
his
cabinet.
They're so dramatic. They're so dramatic.
It's so funny. Oh, my God. This, like, head wound. He's fine, but it's, like, this man has a cane. He's got, like, a physical disability. He's, like...
I know, yeah.
He just drops, and it's, like... But you know he's Rumpelstiltskin, so it's, like, damn, son.
He's just on the ground, like, ah, I'm in pain.
Unconscious, I think.
Oh, was he? I don't remember that.
Yeah, that's why.
Oh,
she
you know,
was
he was unconscious. Yeah,
yeah.
And then
that's a traumatic brain injury. Did he go to the hospital, or is he like, no, Dr. Wells the only doctor? I'm just gonna live with this.
Yeah, just casually live with a concussion, potentially more dangerous. And then the last line I had that I really liked was at the end where Rumpel meets up with Cinderella. And she's like, I want to alter the bargain. He's like, I don't do that. And she's like, I'm having twins. And he fucking chucks his flask to the side. You have my attention.
That's really good. Yeah, I like, just since we're on the subject of Rumpel, can I talk about his outfits? We gush about Emma's clothing all the time. The gold tux. He wears, when he shows up at the wedding, to be like, by the way, the thing that you promised me that you didn't know what I wanted, I said you were going to give me something, blah, blah. I want your firstborn. Bye, babe.
Later. And she's like, crap, I should have read the fine print.
Not even fine print. She doesn't read any of that contract. He just rolls it. It's this long-ass scroll, and she just signs it. Because she's like, whatever, you want gold, jewels, I don't care. I will give you whatever you want. Because she's like, her life is rough. She's... Like her
she's
family,
a maid
is,
to her
family is
family.
Abusive, yes, and she just wants a moment out. And her fairy godmother was there and gave her hope. Is like, oh, I can change my life. This is amazing. And then that got ripped away from her, and then she's desperate to get it back. She'll do anything in that moment. So we know that Rumpelstiltskin hates fairies beyond everything else. What's up, Rob?
I do want to say. I noticed it. I don't know if this was the first episode he did it, but I think it's the first one I noticed where he did his like patented like double finger raise when he says magic always comes with a price.
Oh, I didn't clock that. But yeah, I think you're right.
I think this was the first episode where he did that. Cause that's, cause he said that I think in like the first or the second episode or
he says it
whatever.
In the pilot. Yeah.
He says it in the pilot, but he doesn't do his like
he
little finger
thing.
Wag. Mm-hmm. It's not even like a big gesture. It's just, magic always comes with a price. He just lifts two fingers. It's two pointers. That's it.
I always remember it as being a little bit more. I think later.
Same. Then, maybe it gets more like.
I think, yeah. Because I know.
Because that's the gifts
it.
Of the. Thing
yeah,
like that
thing.
Oh, yeah. He goes like, magic. No, but I don't think when he does like.
Oh, no. He
when
goes,
when he does
Deary.
Like. Deary. Oh, there we go.
That's what it
that's,
is. Yeah, his hand thing. I think as the actor gets more into the character, he does like the hand thing a bit more. And so you
well,
see
so I think probably
grow.
People took the piss out of it a little bit with a few things and just kind of over-exaggerated it in like Comic Cons or something like that. And it just became
oh,
a
yeah.
thing. I can in, almost like, guarantee it'd be fan related.
There's like a bit in season 3 when he's pretending that he's still that Rumpelstiltskin where he does that, but like just is like, oh, fuck, okay, yeah, whatever. And I think that's probably a response to everyone just gravitating to that.
Yeah, it's definitely... It's the same thing with this is something that was pointed out to me recently, and I just never clocked it until recently. Do you guys know Happy Days, that old like 60s show, 70s show?
Yes.
Yeah, with the Fonz and everything, and he goes hey, and he lifts both and he like double finger guns. There's only one scene as far as people have found, because there have been people looking at this, where he does a with both hands. Which is, and it's like his iconic thing that everyone remembers him for, but he only did it once, ironically enough, in a crossover with Mork and Mindy.
And that's why everyone remembered it. It was the crossover of the century.
Yeah. Oh, Robin Williams, you beautiful man.
Yeah. I was going to say, just speaking about Rumpelstiltskin, just to go into the storyline standout. Rumpel's not grabbed my attention before, but he really grabbed my attention in this episode, because like this is the episode where we're really learning that he literally has like every finger in every single pie, basically. Like we're shown hints of like how deep involved in almost every single person's life, but also just like the level of cruelty that he has, the level of manipulation that he has, the amount of foreshadowing they're getting of his involvement in basically changing fate. Like, he even says, like, when he gets locked up, is no matter where we end up, I will get my hand on that child. So he even had, we can assume, the plan then to bring in the dark curse for Regina probably to cast. So there's already hints of all that, of like hints of the level of manipulation of every single person that he had. I really like, I didn't clock the words from the first time I watched it of like, no matter where we end up, but I clocked it this time around. It's like, oh, he knows something's coming before even the dark curse has been brought into discussion.
Well, he made the dark curse. He knows what it does.
And it is, Regina's already announced that she's going to do it.
Yeah.
Because
has she?
Yes, because if Cinderella is already like 5 or so months pregnant, and then she's 9 months pregnant right when the curse is cast because she's been pregnant forever.
Snow White
is already pregnant because she gives birth to Emma the day the curse is cast. So they got pregnant roughly the same time, which means the Regina showing up says, I'm going to steal all your happiness. We don't know that she's going to do the curse. They don't know that's happening yet because they find out after they've captured Rumpelstiltskin, but they know she's going to do something. So he knows she's going to do something. He just doesn't know that she's fucking around and not ripping out her dad's heart yet.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so the plan was that I completely forgot that.
One of us should try and timeline this shit. So this takes, so the Enchanted Forest part takes place before the pilot, after the events of the second episode. Before the pilot, before the events of the second episode, after the events of the third episode.
The events of this episode take place, some of it takes place beforehand, and some of it takes place after, because they don't capture Rumpelstiltskin until Cinderella's already pregnant, but...
How is Cinderella 9 months pregnant if Snow was already pregnant at the wedding? Because... She can't be 9 months pregnant for Snow to still be pregnant.
She got pregnant after Snow.
Yeah, it would have to be that.
Soon after? Because like,
it's got to be immediately. It's got to be immediately after. I think we decided that she was probably pregnant at her wedding.
Yeah, because that's the only thing that makes sense, really. Because like, it's 9 months after.
She hasn't had a good sleep since their honeymoon.
Yeah,
and she's pregnant. Yeah, right. So I think Snow White and Prince Charming aren't married yet at Cinderella's wedding.
Okay.
They're probably engaged.
So then they haven't had the curse announcement.
No, yet. Everyone is happy and everything is great and it's wonderful. And I think they get married, Cinderella and her prince get married, and then Snow White and Prince Charming get married. And then they find out everything's going to go to hell. And then I think, because Cinderella tells when she's like, I'm going to dip. And that's when her prince shows up. He's like, oh, are you going somewhere? Actually, that scene was I found that kind of charming when she's like, Cinderella's like, shit, I'm pregnant. He's going to take my baby. I got to run. I got to go. And she's packing. Then the prince shows up and he's like, hey, babe, are we going somewhere? And she's like, her face, oh, you're going somewhere. And he doesn't like try to stop her or say she can't or no. It's just, he's confused. It's like, what's wrong? What's happening? He knows something's wrong. And as soon as she says this, he's like, we can fix it. He doesn't say, no, you can't run. No, you can't do anything. He's just like, oh, you're going to go somewhere. Okay, yeah. Why are you going to go somewhere all of a sudden?
We stand supportive. What's his face? Charlie or whatever his name is. Thomas.
Thomas.
We stand supportive princes in the show. It's nice.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He reminds me a bit of Bolin. He has this sort of, all the princes have kind of himbo nature. Very
yes,
himbo
they do.
Nature. Like, he doesn't do the whole, like, no, you're not going anywhere. He's just like, automatically just very confused and just doesn't really understand what's going on.
It's a pretty nice parallel between this scene and when Snow White was freaking out to Charming about the curse in the first episode, and Charming was like, don't worry about it. I want to take care of it.
Yeah, he's like, oh, you have nothing to worry about. Whereas Ella's Prince Charming is like, okay, all right, yeah, no, this is good. You're not going to lose me. Nothing's going to happen. We're going to make another deal. Let's go get some help. And doesn't have to be like coaxed into immediately, okay, you're scared, we'll fix it, don't worry about it.
Yeah. It's gonna be so complicated because they're technically both Prince Charmings. This is very it's a situation.
We're four Thomas episodes in. Thomas and David.
Thomas and David. Although technically David is also James, and then that's a whole thing.
Since we were also talking about wardrobe, can we talk about how Emma was wearing a blue jacket?
Yes, blue jacket. Blue jacket like Cinderella's dress. What the fuck? Fran?
Yeah.
I mean, it was like, what does Fran think about the blue jacket?
Well, I love the blue jacket because it gave me such gay aesthetic vibes. Did not clock that it was similar to Cinderella's dress.
There's a lot of references or like homages, I guess, to Cinderella in like the way when like when Henry leaves his shoe on the staircase and Regina yells at him about it.
Oh man, I did not pick up any of these. Yeah, I just thought it was like, oh, bright kid, you know, of course he loses his shoe on the stair. Idiot child.
Literally running up the stairs, loses the shoe. And I think that circles back to like, Fran, what you're talking about earlier, how like Regina's like not physically, an actual, honestly terrible fucking parent would have grounded her child, would have physically punished her child, would have been like, I've told you 1,000 times, I'll take your books, you're not allowed to do it, you're grounded. She's just been like, what did I tell you? Don't do this.
Specifically, like, people can get hurt as well.
Yes, which is a good reason. Someone could trip. So, like, she has reasons for it. It's just, like, an annoying mom thing, but it could have been, if she's actually the evil queen, could have been a lot more horrible.
Yeah.
But back to Cinderella homages. When Sean, who is the Prince Charming of this one, who his dad has forced him to, like, not be with Cinderella, which is, well, we should talk about why that happens. Because that's not really part of Regina's curse. That's part of the magic to trap Rumpelstiltskin. That's the price that the prince paid for that.
I wonder, do we ever get that? Because obviously in the fairy tale world as well, the prince goes missing just as they catch Rumpel. Do we ever find out where he went in the fairy tale world?
I don't remember. All I know is that Rumpel's like, oh, he's gone. Isn't that a shame? If I get my kid back, you get him back. I don't know where he is.
Yeah. Which does technically happen because obviously she does get him back when Emma then makes the deal.
I'm altering the deal. Yeah. So I guess for context, since we didn't dive into it a lot, what happens is as Robert, you mentioned earlier, the way they decide they're going to trick Rumpelstiltskin is they get another quill with magic from the blue fairy that if anybody uses it, it'll like basically imprison their magic. They won't be able to do magic anymore. And so they get Ella to go and be like, oh, hey, like I said, I'm having twins. If you want both of them, I'm going to want you to, our crops are dying and our land isn't fertile and I can't fix that. I can have more kids, but I can't fix this. So sign this contract and you can have both kids if you fix our land. And then when he signs the contract, he freezes. But they talked earlier about, well, because Ella doesn't want to do magic to solve this problem. And she's like, that's what got us into this. There's always a price. I don't want to do that. There must be another way. And her prince is like, this is the only way. Whatever price, I will be willing to pay it. And so what the price is he just fucking goes missing. It's weird. It's like a weird price of magic thing because it doesn't really make sense. He just disappears. And Ella's like, what the fuck is
he? Although there's something in the bushes. So it seems like maybe someone took him.
Yeah.
Except that's just never brought up, I guess. I don't know.
I have no idea. I don't even remember if we see these guys after this episode.
I mean, even if it should get brought up again, it's not important. It's not important. Like, they only get their one episode and that's it. They maybe come back at some point. And
yeah, it's the fairy tale of the week setup that we start to get. In Storybrooke, when we meet Prince Charming, who is now just like a 19-year-old dude named Sean, who lives at his, like, rich dad's house. His dad's like, I don't want to see this, like, my son have his life ruined by that girl's mistakes and like shitty middle class white dude bullshit.
It really was cringe to just be like, oh, why should he ruin his life after one mistake? I'm like,
hate that. But yeah, it's very much different than what we see the prince, because we know, like, the even though we don't see this element of the Cinderella story, it cuts from Rumpelstiltskin has given her the dress to go to the ball to next time we see them, it's their wedding day. So we've skipped all of it else, but we get that it's there because she has the glass slippers, they're together now. So we understand the prince is someone who is going to go after what he wants. He doesn't let anybody stand in his way. He took the slipper, he tracked her down, he found his mystery girl from the ball and he tracked her down. And in this one, like, the curse has kind of turned him into someone who lets people push him around, who like lets his, he know, we can tell that this kid is like, this guy, he feels bad that he abandoned he dumped his girlfriend when he found out that she was pregnant, right? That he let his father pressure him into like not seeing her for 9 months, 28 years. And at the end, he does show up and he gets there. So it's another example of like what the curse is doing to people and how it is changing the way that they naturally are to set them up to be miserable. Because this is a miserable thing to have happened to this guy. But Cinderella homage at the end, he shows up, he's like, I'm so sorry, I never should have left her. I got her a gift. And it's, he got little baby shoes, and they're so small and they're so cute, and he just puts it on her little foot. But she's a newborn, and she'd be just a wrinkly lizard. That's not what babies look like when they're freshly born, y'all. They're hideous.
Yeah, no.
But it would have been more funny if the baby was just born as a full-grown 28-year-old.
Oh, no! It's like an Athena situation. I'm just fully grown. Let's go.
That would have been hilarious if that was the case. Just like the absolute horror of that.
The only people who question it would be like Emma and Henry.
Yeah, everyone else was just like, this is normal.
And everyone like, what the fuck? She gave birth to a woman! Fuck? Hello?
What is this? It's a grown-ass... They're 28!
Yeah.
There's a lot of good things about this. I think the main episode, just to kind of go into the characters we're invested in, Emma is really the highlight for me of this episode, because this is, even though it's Cinderella's episode, it's a Cinderella and Emma episode more than anything because of the Ashley storyline. Like
Cinderella.
Cinderella. It's a Cinderella episode. There's the fact that she's getting involved in a story about teen pregnancy after experiencing it herself, a little bit younger, sort of getting like emotionally invested in fixing what's happening, because she, unlike herself, she knows that she made the right decision for Henry. Like, she wasn't a mother, she still isn't a mother. She knew she should give Henry up, and that was her own decision. She's seeing someone who's not being able to make her choice in the case of Ashley, who is capable of raising a child. Like, Ruby says all the things that she's been doing. Like, she's been going to night classes. She's been preparing. She's been buying things for the baby. Like, she's been preparing herself for this. So Emma's learned that she is fully capable, but no one believes that she is. So she's getting invested to help this, because she got to make her choice, even if it's one that also at the same time she didn't, because, as we know the context, she was in prison. But like, she wants to make sure that this other girl is gaining the confidence to be able to make the choice herself. And I just really like that. I really like that we're seeing like this more emotional development of Emma. I was kind of interested to see if the, because I couldn't fully remember this episode, if she mentions at any point that she made the right decision giving up Henry. Because I think that would have been devastating for Henry to hear. But I feel like that's something that needs to be said. Because I don't remember if that's ever properly said, that she knew that she would never change her choice of giving up Henry.
I don't know, but I can't remember. I honestly, we'll find out when we get there. Because the theme of the show is like giving someone their best chance. And that's, they haven't really harped on that theme yet, but eventually it becomes like the huge thesis of the show. And it is framed at like, what Emma did was hard, but it was her decision to give Henry his best chance, because she was, like she says to, they're in the, it's great, because Ashley tries to leave town and she can't because the curse. She starts going to labor right when she hits the sign, and so when they finally catch up to her, she's just like, my baby's coming, oh my god, and they're driving her back into town. She's like, no, take me to Boston, he's gonna take my baby, I can't go back. And Emma's like, honey, you don't have 4 hours. No, we have to go back. But in their car, she's like, he's like, I'm not. Basically, Emma tells her, like, if you want to be a mom, you have to be ready. Is this something you can do? And Ashley's like, yes, I am. And Emma's like, are you sure? Because I wasn't. And the camera, we immediately see Henry's reaction. He's like, just shocked, like, oh, we're going to talk about this. Okay. And Emma's saying, like, you have to be committed to be a mom. You can't just run away anymore. You have to be ready for this thing. And it's like, it's okay if you're not. But if you are, I will make sure you get to, like you said, friend, I will make sure you get to make that choice. Mm. And what I liked about the scene is it's great, but I also think it's great that Henry got to hear that conversation. Because like in the first episode, like Mary Margaret tells Emma that one of the things Henry grapples with is that question of like, why was I given up? Like, why didn't they want me? Why didn't my mom want me? And I think their moment is like him getting a little bit of like an answer to that, and that she wasn't ready to be my mom. She just wasn't. And so, and this like intense moment kind of doesn't make it feel like, oh, it wasn't ever about me. It's not that she didn't want me. It was utterly about her.
Mm. Yeah. And I really like that, because also it kind of slightly, not fully, but I feel like it's a situation that half puts Henry a little bit in his place in some areas, because he had, not fully, because he's still a brat, But
friend,
like,
we get it. You don't like Henry.
I know. It's more it's because he's continued. Like, we can
stop, Fran. He's already dead. punching.
We can see that Emma isn't the most comfortable. Like, when Henry literally says at the start of the episode, "What should I call you?" You can see the instant panic of her face, of the eye, seemingly in her mind, of like the idea of him calling her mum or something like that. Like, because she assumed that's what he meant. Obviously, he meant code names, because, of course.
Yeah.
But the instant panic you see on her face. But he's like continuing to kind of force himself on her, to like force himself into her life and kind of force her to get used to him and being around him and stuff like that, even when she's not the most comfortable. I think that was the first case that we see him recognize that this is hard for her too. Even though he's still 10 and he's still an idiot and he's not going to fully get it because he is a child. Children do things like that.
I think he understood the idea that, like, Emma was still needing time to get comfortable. Because at the end, when she's like, oh, how about Pumpkin as a nickname for me? And he's like, no, I have a nickname in mind for you. And she's like, what is it? And he's like, I don't think you're ready. And it's Mom, right? Like, he wants to call her Mom, but not yet.
I didn't catch that. I think that is a good point. Robert, where I think it is Henry understanding that, like, it's like you said, Fran, it's hard for Emma too, and it's probably not something he's realized, is that he's like, why don't you want to be around me? I just want to be around you so much, and recognizing, like, oh, and while seeing this other, like, this 19-year-old, and oh, she's in pain and she's yelling and it's scary, like, giving birth is scary, this moment is really scary, and putting that in association with, like, whatever was going on with Emma. But I think this is the first time the show really very explicitly states Emma was 18 when she had Henry. Like, we know that from the math, if Henry is 10 and she is 28, but this one, they very, like, when she's talking to Ashley at the beginning of the episode, she's like, oh, I'm 19, and Emma's like, I was 18, so I know what you're going through.
I have a minor question. Based on the timeline, technically she would have been 17 if he's already 10 and she only just turned 28 when he came. That means he's already 10 now, so she should have, like, she would have been 17, turning 18 very soon.
Yeah, that'd be,
because he's 10 at the time, and she'd only just turned 28 when he met her. Like, it was her birthday, and she was turning 28.
Yeah, no, okay.
Yeah, so she was actually 17.
Yeah, and it's not like they share a birthday, so.
Yeah, because the whole thing, because I remember this, is that when it gets to the whole other parent situation, the way in which the show did it is that they actually have Emma being 16, so underaged, in where they are, so there's lots of questionable things of, like, this is kind of illegal, the relationship that you're having between these two characters. And I just remember that, and now bringing that up, I was like, oh, you know, technically she was actually 17, so it's still even more dubious.
Yeah,
no one knows how to do maths in this show,
apparently well. Not well, time means nothing to anybody here, so
yeah. That just popped into my head. Sorry.
No, that's a good point. Yeah. She was 17.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's...
At least 17 when she got pregnant.
Yeah.
If well, she, not like, 16. If
Henry... Yes. Because, like you said, if Henry was already born...
The youngest she could be...
Is 16.
If he's 10 as she turns 28, which means...
She would have to be 17.
Well, yeah. If he was born the day before her 18th birthday.
Was he? Wait, what?
I don't know. I'm just trying to hypothetical math order. If he was born the day before her 18th birthday, then she could have been 17 when she first got pregnant, because it's 9 months.
I'm just looking it up. So he's born, like, on August, and she's born in October.
So that's 3 months.
Yeah, so she would have been 17. Three months before she turned 18.
3 months before her birthday, plus minus the 9 months to be pregnant, would be a year. So she'd be 16.
No, she'd be, if August.
She'd still be 17.
She'd still be 17.
Right?
But because... only just.
Only just, because August is the 8th month of the year. And so she would have gotten
pregnant in December. But the whole thing is, she's only just 2 months into being 17.
She is 17 years old.
She is 17. To go back in.
So it is wild that the show, because that's not close enough for her to have been like, I was 18. You were 17. If it was like a couple days before her 18th birthday, maybe it was in the same month of the 18th birthday, I could see rounding up. She was 17.
Yeah, and that's only just so 17 as well.
Yeah, so she was 17 when she gave birth, as we find out later, in prison.
Yeah.
Because that's a thing it's that Mr. Worse. Gold keeps. Yeah, when he goes to her and is like, oh, Ashley took something from me, I want you to find her. And she's like, why don't you just go to the cops? And he's like, oh, well, you know, she's a confused, scared, pregnant young woman. And, you know, I'd hate to see that baby born in jail. And that's what gets Emma to agree to do something, to work for him and go track down Ashley and stuff, which I think she probably would have already done when she finds out Ashley's in trouble, because I think Emma was already invested. But that's the card that Mr. Gold pulls that people keep, that Emma eventually starts to pull, is like, we don't want to see Ashley give birth in jail, because eventually we find out that that's exactly what happened to Emma. And Mr. Gold knows this.
Yeah. Which then also brings into question of how. Which obviously we then kind of find out later as well.
Yeah. Because that's, this whole episode is like, he doesn't want, Rumpelstiltskin doesn't want Cinderella's baby. He doesn't fucking care about that. He has no interest in having this baby. Like, it will serve him not to have to be responsible for a fucking child. What he wants is the savior to owe him a favor. And so he literally just does this to Cinderella. So in the future, Emma will be it creates a scenario in which Emma is invested in what happens to Ashley and making sure that Ashley gets to keep her baby, so she agrees to take on the deal.
I did not even clock that that was like a very much future process of making sure that oh my god, it makes this motherfucker!
This motherfucker! Right?
Oh my god. It's okay, so good. That makes the whole thing, because I guess we've kind of sort of talked about a few things that we decide. Actually, no. The one that you put, go into that. I know I've talked about the Henry situation. but your comment of the socks under the bed.
Oh, yeah. Just completely change gears. That line was weird to me 10 years ago. I was sitting there being like, what fairy tale character is associated with their socks? What the fuck is that about? That's a weird thing to draw attention to. And it's weird, and even the dazzling actress that she is couldn't deliver that line in a way that felt anyway natural, because no person would ever say that shit.
The pacing is supposed to imply, I guess, in that scene, especially with how she's like fixing up her hair and fixing up her dress, and she's like, oh, your socks are under the bed. I guess it's supposed to imply that they had a really wild time, which is not something I don't think anyone needs to know, but...
Mm-mm. Also, how does she know? Like, the socks,
you can't see!
Yeah, you can't see them. You can't see them easily. That means she would have to have been on the floor.
Yeah, even if she saw them.
Oh, maybe she was on the floor earlier.
Okay.
No, she's more dignified than that.
Is she?
She's more refined. I'm just thinking of like Clarice's line of like, a queen is always refined.
I mean, she can be refined. Afterwards, when she cleans up.
You can be refined and have floor sex, I hear. I know nothing of this topic, however.
No.
So it's God. So this is what's kind of weird. So to zero in on this nonsense that we now get to deal with, and I have very strong violent opinions of later, please, when we find out more information, but I will hold that.
Yeah.
Because we don't need to do it now, because then we'll also do it then, and
that's gonna be a main central topic. So
motherfucker. So on this one, it's like Regina's gone all day long. She's going to be gone till 5 because it's, she tells Henry at the beginning of the episode, you know, I know you think otherwise, but I don't actually like these Saturday city council meetings. And so we get that every Saturday, Henry is just left home alone, which is not a bad mom thing. He is 10 though, and I am a little bit like, I think that's too young.
It depends, especially on how long has this Saturday at night city council thing has been going on.
28 years.
I would say that when Henry, maybe not when Henry's around, maybe before Henry, yes. But I think when Henry comes in, I wouldn't say.
Oh, before Henry comes around, it would probably be an every night city council.
Yeah. So, well, I don't think city council is code for she's going to go fuck the sheriff. I think there is a city council meeting. I just don't think it actually lasts till 5.
Yeah. No, that sounds weird. It's like from early morning.
And then afterwards is when they go hook up.
They're like, hey, good city council meeting. Thanks for bringing up the taxes yeah. for like the roads and stuff.
Fran's doing this thing she does when she pushes her palms against her eyebrows, and that usually means she has a big feeling thought.
Yeah. Just, what is the fucking point of it? That's the whole thing. There's no point except for later to make her a worse person. That is literally the only reason.
Literally, like, Darian, you go.
Oh, I was just saying, it feels like to me like they're trying to frame her as like, wow, she really is a bad mom though, because she just leaves her son alone on a Saturday when she doesn't have to. She could, the city council meeting she's mayor, she has to go, but she could go home probably a lot sooner than she does. Yeah. And that's terrible. And on one hand, I'm like, she's allowed to go have sex with someone, like, that's fine. I mean, then there's other things about it that's not fine, but in this framework of like, kind of weirdly judgmental of this single mom going to hook up with this guy. And it's like, I think it's meant to be viewed as like a bad mom thing because it's Saturday. Your son's home alone and you're just going to like go have sex with some guy. And I am a little bit like, on the same side of that. It's like, you could do date night and not leave your son home alone all day long on a Saturday. Like, maybe if you spent more time with him, he wouldn't think you're evil. I don't know.
Yeah. I just think the whole irony of it all is like there's a big message here of just like, oh, you know, teen pregnancy is like a really important message of like no judgment and stuff like that, but then it still ends with her not being a single mother because apparently single mothers is the worst thing possible in existence in this world for some reason, alongside adoption. So you know,
it's so
honestly
weird.
the lesson of this episode should just be don't have sex, done.
No, but so just this is the stock line, because what happens in the episode is that Regina's like getting ready to leave, she's fixing her hair, and she's like, oh, I'll see you at the next city council meeting. By the way, your socks are still under the bed. And it's like, we don't see who she's talking to. We just hear someone in the shower. Yeah. And then later on, Emma calls Graham and she's like, yeah, I do think I'm going to take that deputy position you offered me at the beginning of the episode when we were awkwardly flirting. That sounds good. And then we see Graham. He's like, okay, yeah, that sounds great. And then he hands the phone and then drops down to reach under his bed to grab his socks. It's so bizarre, because what that awkward, uncomfortable line is meant to do is, and it's not even uncomfortable as in it regards to sex, it's just uncomfortable because it's weird, and I find socks to be weird in general, so I don't like anything about this. But it's him physically getting his socks out from under the bed. It's supposed to tell the audience, yes, this is the same person that Regina was having sex with. This is it. Oh, levels. And it didn't have to be this weird, like, socks under the bed line. It literally could have been like, Regina picks up her keys and on the side table is a very distinct lamp. How odd. Maybe it's some sort of reference to his magical fairy tale backstory, much like Ruby's little wolf charm that hangs in the window of her cute little hot rod. And then when he talks to Emma and he puts his phone down, the camera follows the phone and we see, oh, it's the same lamp. And it could have been that. And I feel like that's 1,000 times better than just this weirdness. And maybe it is just, it suggests that, oh, it's, they had super rough sex and the socks ended up under the bed. And I wouldn't have clocked that was supposed to be the connection. I just still find it weird.
Yeah, it's just weird. No matter how you look at it, it's just weird. It's just weird. It's don't uncomfortable. Like it.
I find it so funny that the show is supposedly family friendly, but literally the family friendly just means no homosexual characters.
Yeah, I was gonna say it can be whatever; it just can't be gay.
Yeah, no, Emma's literally like the reason she meets Ashley is because as soon as Regina leaves, she spills her hot chocolate all over herself, which like. I know Regina doesn't have magic, but her whole enjoy your cocoa, and then it spills almost as like that bitch cast a spell, but we know she
didn't. Yeah, so it's supposed to play like something along those lines, but if you watch it, it's just Emma just fumbling her cup and fucking it up and like throwing it on herself.
Because, I mean, Regina, she drew attention to the cup and the gay panic, just like, I can't focus on the cup anymore, oh god.
It's the gay panic, literally. Every gift set is just like the sheer panic of just like the sexual attention. That whole scene was sexual attention. No one could tell me otherwise.
Yeah, but on the thing that you said, Fran, about how like it's family friendly and that it means no gays, there's like a fucking half of a scene where Emma is just in her bra, which I'm not saying, oh, bad, don't put that on TV, but it is just one of those things where it's like, was this stuff supposed to be edgy? Like, this was airing on, like, ABC. But yeah, and that's, like, I mean, there were other shows around it that could be a little bit more, like, oh, risque, like, How to Get Away with Murder, and those kind of shows were on around it. But this one was very much, like, it's the fairy tale one. And I'm just now, as we're watching it now, realizing, oh, this was supposed to be edgy. It was the edgy fairy tale one. You had, like, Emma in her bra and the evil queen having sex. And it's like, oh, and the pregnant teen.
Yeah.
I just didn't. But no homos.
But no.
No homo.
But no queers allowed.
Nope. No. Or people of color, predominantly.
Or people
either.
Of color. We will get rid of you immediately.
Yeah. If you're a woman of color, unless you are racially ambiguous, which in the case of, like, Lana Plia being a Latina woman, you wouldn't automatically kind of pick that up, for example. She gets a... And she's also the villain.
I think the only woman of color in the entire series who nothing bad happens to, quote-unquote nothing bad happens to, I think is Mulan. I think.
She does have emotional devastation, but then is immediately written out of the show.
Yeah, okay, I guess that's what's the bad thing that happens to her. And then she comes back briefly to make out with Ruby and then leaves.
Oh no, that's not her.
That's someone else. Wrong. Never mind. No,
it's
you're
Dorothy.
Right.
Dorothy.
Yeah.
A character that literally only exists for that one episode, and then both she and Ruby disappear again.
Ruby had her red shorts again in this episode, and I really think they're cute. I'm going to buy a pair. We should probably start to wrap up because it's been over an hour.
Oh, yeah.
But I think, unless there's more things, but I think I want to talk about before we start to finish is that the show was always, I felt, strongest when it, yes, it has the overarching arcs and stuff, but the show ongoing when it had the fairy tale of the week format. When every week we had a really isolated, like, this is the problem, this is the solution, we're going to deal with it in the whatever the fairy tale backstory is and all that stuff. And I felt like this episode introduced that concept really well, where we have the flashbacks of, like, here's our fairy tale setup, and then whatever is happening to that character now still reflects who they were then, but also is going on to expand these other characters and their stories. And, like, this one's very, like you said, very Emma. We're learning more about Emma, and we're seeing her and her processing and her having to grapple with, this is the thing I went through, and there was no one to have my back. I only had people telling me I couldn't do it, and I believed them. And so this girl needs someone to say, you can do it, and I'm going to support whatever decision you want to make. I'm going to give you the right to make it. And so I think we lose the fairy tale of the week format, and that only time we get fairy tale backstory is when it is 100% central to whatever bullshit they have going on in the main arc. And there's no more of these small little tales, a small little, here's one book we get to read in the bigger book. It all has to be part of the bigger book. And we lose that eventually. And it sucks, because watching this episode was like, this was lovely.
Yeah.
Again, this show only has like 1.5 good seasons.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There are highlights from later on, but they lose the core focus of what the series was to begin with when they start going for these huge arcs and forgetting about the characters. Because the main thing about Once Upon a Time is its characters, and we basically got like a character analysis in this episode of Cinderella and Emma and how they reflect each other, and it was just beautiful.
And it was quiet and it was impactful. It didn't have to be always arcing drama, major crisis, high stakes. It could just be personal stakes.
When does the Ruby episode come in? Because I'm really looking forward to that one.
Not for a while, I don't think.
Damn it.
Eventually.
Yeah, it does happen this season, but I don't think it's...
Oh, I know it happens this season. I know the two episodes I'm really looking forward to, just based off my memory, are the Rumpel episode and the Ruby episode.
Mine is the Stable Boy in the Ruby episode.
Who's the Stable Boy?
It's Rumpel and Stable Boy for me. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. But I guess to kind of summarize and kind of close out, thanks everyone for tuning in to the episode. Check out our social media at StoryBrookePod on Instagram and Twitter. Trying to remember the email. If you want to email us with your
entering StoryBrookePodcast@outlook.com.
There it is, which is also, it's in a link somewhere, so you'll find it. Does anyone have a thing they want to sign off? And if no one does, I think I may have.
Don't have sex.
No, Fran, you go, you have a thing.
Okay, it's literally just a line from the episode, but for everyone watching, enjoy your cocoa, and I'll see you next time.